The Outline of History by H.G. Wells. This unabridged recording of the reading of The Outline of History was produced in 1993 by Blackstone Audiobooks, which holds the copyright thereto. Neither this recording nor any part thereof may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authorization from Blackstone Audiobooks. The Outline of History. The book is subtitled, Being a Plain History of Life and Mankind. Introduction. A philosophy of the history of the human race, worthy of its name, must begin with the heavens and descend to the earth, must be charged with the conviction that all existence is one, a single conception sustained from beginning to end, upon one identical law. Friedrich Ratzel. This Outline of History, of which this is a third edition, freshly revised and rearranged, is an attempt to tell truly and clearly in one continuous narrative the whole story of life and mankind so far as it's known today. It's written plainly for the general reader, but its aim goes beyond its use as merely interesting reading matter. There's a feeling abroad that the teaching of history considered as a part of general education is in an unsatisfactory condition, and particularly that the ordinary treatment of this subject by the class and teacher and examiner is too partial and narrow. But the desire to extend the general range of historical ideas is confronted by the argument that the available time for instruction is already consumed by that partial and narrow treatment, and that therefore, however desirable this extension of range may be, it's in practice impossible. If an Englishman, for example, has found the history of England quite enough for his powers of assimilation, then it seems hopeless to expect his sons and daughters to master universal history, if that's to consist of the history of England, plus the history of France, plus the history of Germany, plus the history of Russia, and so on. To which the only possible answer is that universal history is at once something more and something less than the aggregate of the national histories to which we're accustomed, that it must be approached in a different spirit and dealt with in a different manner. This book seeks to justify that answer. It's been written primarily to show that history as one whole is amenable to a more broad and comprehensive handling than is the history of special nations and periods, a broader handling that will bring it within the normal limitations of time and energy set to the reading and education of an ordinary citizen. This outline deals with ages and races and nations, where the ordinary history deals with reigns and pedigrees and campaigns. But it won't be found to be more crowded with names and dates, nor more difficult to follow and understand. History is no exception amongst the sciences. As the gaps fill in, the outline simplifies. As the outlook broadens, the clustering multitude of details dissolves into general laws. And many topics of quite primary interest to mankind, the first appearance and the growth of scientific knowledge, for example, and its effects upon human life, the elaboration of the ideas of money and credit, or the story of the origins and spread and influence of Christianity, which must be treated fragmentarily or by elaborate digressions in any partial history, arise and flow completely and naturally in one general record of the world in which we live. The need for a common knowledge of the general facts of human history throughout the world has become very evident during the tragic happenings of the last few years. Swifter means of communication have brought all men closer to one another, for good or for evil. War becomes a universal disaster, blind and monstrously destructive. It bombs the baby in its cradle and sinks the food ships that cater for the non-combatant and the neutral. There can be no peace now, we realize, but a common peace in all the world. No prosperity, but a general prosperity. But there can be no common peace and prosperity without common historical ideas. Without such ideas to hold them together in harmonious cooperation, with nothing but narrow, selfish, and conflicting nationalist traditions, races and peoples are bound to drift towards conflict and destruction. This truth, which was apparent to that great philosopher Kant a century or more ago, it's the gist of his tract upon universal peace, is now plain to the man in the street. Our internal policies and our economic and social ideas are profoundly vitiated at present by wrong and fantastic ideas of the origin and historical relationship of social classes. A sense of history as the common adventure of all mankind is as necessary for peace within as it is for peace between the nations. The writer will offer no apology for making this experiment. His disqualifications are manifest. But such work needs to be done by as many people as possible. He was free to make his contribution, and he was greatly attracted by the task. He has read sedulously and made the utmost use of all the help he could obtain. There isn't a chapter that hasn't been examined by some more competent person than himself, and very carefully revised. He has particularly to thank his friends, Sir E. Ray Lankester, Sir H. H. Johnston, Professor Gilbert Murray, and Mr. Ernest Barker for much counsel and direction and editorial help. Mr. Philip Godela has toiled most efficiently and kindly through all the proofs. Mr. A. Allison, Professor D. W. Arnold, Mr. Arnold Bennett, the Reverend A. H. Trevor Benson, Mr. Aoud de Blacam, Mr. Lawrence Binion, the Reverend G. W. Bromfield, Sir William Bull, Sir L. Cranmer Bing, Mr. A. J. D. Campbell, Mr. A. Y. Campbell, Mr. L. Y. Chen, Mr. A. R. Cowan, Mr. O. G. S. Crawford, Dr. W. S. Culbertson, Mr. R. Langton Cole, Mr. B. G. Collins, Mr. J. J. L. Duvinduck, Mr. O. W. Ellis, Mr. G. S. Ferrier, Mr. David Freeman, Mr. S. N. Fu, Mr. G. B. Gloin, Sir Richard Gregory, Mr. F. H. Hayward, Mr. Sidney Herbert, Dr. Father Krupicka, Mr. H. Lang Jones, Mr. C. H. B. Lawton, Mr. B. L. McAlpin, Mr. G. H. Mayer, Mr. F. S. Marvin, Mr. J. S. Mayhew, Mr. B. Stafford Morse, Professor J. L. Myers, the Honourable W. Ormsby Gore, Sir Sidney Olivier, Mr. R. I. Pocock, Mr. J. Pringle, Mr. W. H. R. Rivers, Sir Denison Ross, Dr. E. J. Russell, Dr. Charles Singer, Mr. A. St. George Sanford, Dr. C. O. Stalibras, Mr. G. H. Walsh, Mr. G. P. Wells, Miss Rebecca West, and Mr. George Whale have all to be thanked for help either by reading parts of the manuscript or by pointing out errors in the published parts, making suggestions, answering questions, or giving advice. Numerous other helpful correspondents have pointed out printer's errors and minor slips in the serial publication which preceded the book edition, and they've added many useful items of information, and to those writers also the warmest thanks are due. Mr. C. M. Anton Bellew, Mr. Henry Coates, Mr. J. A. Corry, Mr. Archibald Craig, Mr. W. V. Cruden, Mr. A. H. Dodd, Mr. T. B. Goldsmith, Mr. F. E. Green, Mr. F. S. Hare, Mr. Homer B. Hulbert, Mr. Walter Ingleby, Mr. J. H. Leviton, Mr. H. Comyn Maitland, Mr. Carsten Mayer, Mr. William Platt, Mr. F. Gordon Rowe, Mr. Alden Sampson, Mr. Neville H. Smith, Mr. M. Timour, Mr. W. H. Thompson, Mr. A. J. Vaughan, Mr. W. A. Voss, Mr. G. F. Waits, and one or two correspondents with illegible signatures have made valuable suggestions since the publication of the second edition. Pamphlets against the outline by Mr. Gom and Dr. Downey have also been useful in this later revision, but of course none of these helpers are to be held responsible for the judgments, tone, arrangement, or writing of this outline. In the relative importance of the parts, in the moral and political implications of the story, the final decision has necessarily fallen to the writer. The problem of illustrations was a very difficult one for him, for he had no previous experience in the production of an illustrated book. In Mr. J. F. Horobin, he's had the good fortune to find not only an illustrator but a collaborator. Mr. Horobin has spared no pains to make this work informative and exact. His maps and drawings are a part of the text, the most vital and decorative part. Some of them represent the reading and inquiry of many laborious days. The index to this edition is the work of Mr. Strickland Gibson of Oxford. Several correspondents have asked for a pronouncing index, and accordingly this has been provided. The writer owes a word of thanks to that living index of printed books, Mr. J.F. Cox of the London Library. He would also like to acknowledge here the help he's received from Mrs. Wells. Without her labour in typing and retyping the drafts of the various chapters as they've been revised and amended, in checking references, finding suitable quotations, hunting up illustrations, and keeping in order the whole mass of material for this history, and without her constant help and watchful criticism, its completion would have been impossible. H. G. Wells.